I had so many buyers that kept asking me for an existing business because they didn't want to get into franchising. They didn't want to start up. And so I kept saying, no, no, no. And I'm probably like, gosh, there must be a big need out here. Maybe I should open up my M&A practice. And that was a little over 20 years ago. And since I've sold 500 businesses personally, my company has sold even more than that. We've over 1,000 more at this point.
Welcome to the Small Business Storytellers, the show where we dive deep into the stories and secrets of businesses focused on not just making money, but making the world a better place. My name is Seth Silvers, and my passion is helping businesses grow that are making the world a better place. Every episode, you will hear from transformational leaders and business owners as we dive into what has helped them grow and what has helped them stay true to themselves along the way. Also, every week we are hosting live conversations with our guests in Fireside Chat, where we give you, the audience, the opportunity to ask them your burning questions. So make sure to join us live on Fireside Chat on your mobile device. Let's dive in. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Small Business Storytellers. I'm excited about this conversation because over my business journey over the last couple of years, my perspective has shifted on one big topic, and that is the idea of selling your business. Today, we're going to talk with Michelle Seiler Tucker, who's the author of Exit Rich and has helped numerous businesses sell. And we're going to dive into this world of, should you sell your business? How should you be running your business today? All of these questions so that hopefully, even if you've never wanted to sell your business, maybe that perspective will be challenged a little bit today. So, Michelle, how are you doing today? Welcome to the show. Absolutely. We are so happy to have you here on the show. I want to dive straight in to this. To start, why do you think that business owners should want to sell their business?
The biggest reason is, I'm going to go back to what Steve Forbes says, and Steve Forbes endorsed my book, Exit Rich, that 80% of businesses on the market will never sell. And M&A Source says 90% will never sell. So that means you have less than a 10 to 20% chance of selling your business. And the reason for that is because business owners, well, there's many reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is because business owners don't think about selling their business until a catastrophic event occurs, whether it's internal or external. Internal could be health issues, partners disputes, divorce, death. External could be this pandemic we've been living in for the last 2 years. And also burnout. I mean, business owners get burned out. You know, they're tired of the uphill battle. They're tired of dealing with employees, especially today. I'm getting so many different calls like, I can't take anymore. I can't take these employees. So business owners don't think about selling until something happens. And they're like, oh, all of a sudden they have to sell. Well, when that occurs, they typically don't have a sellable business because they haven't built a sellable asset. So I always say you should really start with the end in mind, like Stephen Covey says, and really plan your exit from the beginning of starting or buying your company so you don't get caught in a situation. You know, I had a lady that called me from Dallas and said her husband dropped dead from a heart attack at the age of 40. Left her with a pile of debt. She knew nothing about his business. He had a construction company, but he really didn't have a company. He had a glorified job in which he went to work at every day. And so all the information, all the content, all the, you know, his core competencies, everything that ran his business was in his head. So when he died, the business died, there was nothing to sell. So we should always think about selling our business. So number one, we have a sellable asset because there will come a day when you say, oh, I've got to sell my business. And if something was to happen to you, you want to make sure that your family is taken care of.
Yeah. I think a lot of people over the last maybe decade or so have kind of adopted this phrase of like a more of a lifestyle business, you know, more of something that, you know, it's kind of just funding your lifestyle. It's going to be something working in the background. Maybe not a sell, you know, maybe not the intent of selling, like, oh, this will just be, you know, yes, a job, but really a business that we own that we have more flexibility over. I'd love to know, what do you think of that phrase?
Because I'm sure you've heard that phrase. And that's typically small businesses that have 1099s, independent contractors. They don't really have a company with employees and things of that nature. So they're working out of their home. They have no desire to sell it. So really not worth anything. But as far as, you know, mid-sized businesses to larger companies, they don't have that mindset. You know, now they still haven't planned for their exit, but they don't have the mindset that this is a lifestyle business. You know, yes, it provides for their family. Yes, it's, it provides a good living. It gives them some flexibility. Sometimes a lot of owners have zero flexibility in their companies.
How did you get into this question. World?
At a very young age, I told my mom that I would never work for anybody because I don't like to be told what to do, which is crazy because my clients tell me what to do every day. So I started opening up businesses, starting businesses as a teenager. And oh my gosh.
What were some of those first ones?
Like, I had a small little publishing company, just a small little high school publishing company. But then I opened up a wedding publishing business and a wedding event company. Had a small little graphics business, just different little things like that. And then I ended up getting recruited by Xerox. So I lied to my mom. I did get a job. And I was recruited as high volume manager. But within 6 months, I was promoted to regional vice president, overseeing 100 different salespeople. And I don't know if you've ever worked for a Fortune 500 company, but it's not all what it's cracked up to be. Especially, I'm a salesperson. My nickname is the closer. I love to find out what the problems are, solve the problems. I'm solution oriented. I like building relationships that last a lifetime. You don't really do that in corporate America, especially, you know, when you're in that high level position, because you're so busy going to meetings to schedule more meetings, to schedule follow-up meetings, and there's so much red tape that you can't really get anything done. And so I ended up leaving Xerox and transitioning into opening up my own franchise business. So I was an equity partner with different franchisors, and we did franchise sales, franchise development, franchise consulting. I had so many buyers that kept asking me for an existing business because they didn't want to get into franchising. They didn't want a startup. And so I kept saying, no, no, no. And I'm probably like, gosh, there must be a big need out here. Maybe I should open up my M&A practice. And that was a little over 20 years ago. And since I've sold 500 businesses personally, and my company has sold even more than that. We've over 1,000 mark at this point.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. And I'm sure over the years, you've had a lot of people that have walked in the door or, you know, given you a phone call and said, hey, I'm ready to sell or I want to sell. And some of them have been ready. Some of them have probably been, oh, wow, you know, you're doing all these things right. But I'm sure that a lot of them, there's probably things they're doing that would make their business maybe unsellable or, you know, make them not a good target to sell. What are some of the things that business owners are commonly doing that they might not be aware of or that they're not doing that might not make their business a good candidate to sell?
So in my book, Exit Rich, we talk about building the infrastructure on the six P's, because businesses are not just evaluated on EBITDA or revenues. Even as earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, they're really evaluated on EBITDA plus all the six P's, all the assets that you've built, all the proprietary assets. So number one is people. One of the biggest mistakes that business owners make is they're control freaks. So they want to have their hand in every pot, and they, you know, feel like in order that they need to do everything if they want it done right. Well, that can't be further from the truth, because most entrepreneurs are not good at everything. Most of them are not good at leadership and management. So entrepreneurs really need to focus on the strengths and hire the weaknesses. So you have to, you don't grow a business, you grow people, and people grow the business. And the first P is people. So you really, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs don't have a good team. They got the wrong people in the wrong seats. And they're not operating on all levels because they just don't have the right team. Many entrepreneurs don't even have the right management team in place. And this is just not for small businesses. This is for mid-market as well. We're selling a $55 million company right now, and they have 350 employees. But guess what? They don't have a CFO. They don't have a COO. The whole business is really dependent upon the owner. So we're selling a percentage of the company, because the business can't run without that owner. So that's one of the biggest mistakes is that business owners are trying to do it all and are not, they're trying to grow the business without growing the people. And then another big mistake is that business owners make is they have one congruent revenue stream. Restaurants. A lot of the restaurants closed down during this pandemic because they have one way they get paid. Consumers come in or they take food to go. So when the roller shut down, the restaurant shut down. They have no e-commerce business. They have no, you know, nothing really exclusive to their brand. So you got to make sure you always have congruent revenue streams. And I don't know if you know this, but when I wrote my very first book, Sell Your Business for What It's Worth, in 2013, I did the research and learned that 98% of startups would fail within the first 1 to 5 years. But when I wrote Exit Rich, I realized that the business landscape has flip-flopped. So now it's only 30% of startups are at risk. But out of 27.6 million companies, those businesses that have been in business for 10 years or longer, 70% of them are going out of business. 70%. So another big mistake is lack of innovation and lack of marketing. Business owners stop innovating. Look at Toys R Us. They went out of business. They did nothing new in 75 years. Look at Blockbuster. They could have bought Netflix. They sat back and did nothing.
Yeah.
So a lot of business owners are not innovating and they stopped marketing. And so therefore they've lost a lot of market share. The other thing is, so we call that product. The burpee is processes. This $55 million company doesn't have all their processes buttoned up. They have one company where they have no processes and they told their employees to write the processes. So not having your processes buttoned up, not having employee contracts, not having an SOP checklist, you know, not having non-competes, those are all big issues because if you have a company you're trying to sell and you don't have non-competes with your management team, your deal could fall apart. And then also, if you don't have your processes buttoned up, then guess what? They could discount money from the for the sale of your business because they have to go in there and work on the processes. Same thing with people. You know, we're selling one company that has a manufacturing plant, and they had all their people were 1099s. How do you have 1099s in a manufacturing plant and a warehouse? I mean, all you need is one catastrophic event, and boom, you're out of business because everybody's suing you. So there's all kinds of different mistakes.
Right.
And proprietary is another big mistake where business owners haven't protected their proprietary assets. So maybe they didn't protect their, they didn't get a federal trademark, they just got a state trademark. So therefore they're having to fight, you know, to try to keep their name, try to keep their corporation name and end up losing it. And I have to restart the branding process. Another thing that keeps them from selling is contracts. Most businesses have contracts, but I've never met a business owner that has a transferability clause in that contract. And 98% of all deals are asset sales. 2% are stock. So if you don't have transferability clause in your agreements, then either your buyer has to agree to a stock sale or you have to go to all of your clients and get them to sign a consent to transfer.
Yeah, there's so many things that people, they're just not,
you don't know what you don't know. What you don't know. And guess what? Customer concentration. So proprietary is a fourth P. Patrons is the fifth P because a lot of business owners have customer concentration. This $55 million company we're selling has 70% of their revenue tied up with one client. We've been through 300, 400 buyers and they're all saying, nope, too much risk. But we finally got a strategic that's like, okay, I'm okay with it. You know, and these are the reasons. But it's very difficult to sell a business that has customer concentration and not customer diversification. The other thing, our business owners are not innovating in marketing and are losing their customer share because their customers are aging out. So you got to constantly innovate and market for that younger generation of buyer. And younger generations don't buy the same way as baby boomers and Gen X buy. And then last but not least, you got profits. Now, I don't know if you know this, but I believe it's 3 out of 5 businesses get embezzled every year. And I always say lack of profits is never your problem. It's a symptom of not running on the other 5 P's. So I could just tell you so many more mistakes why businesses don't sell. Oh, here's another big one I think is important for you to know, Seth, is when a business owner does decide to sell, they call us up and I always take their temperature and ask them, you know, what is your... what are your expectations? And most of the time, almost 98-99% of the time, sellers will say, well, my business is worth $20 million. I'm like, well, how'd you come up with that number? Because they might have $500,000 in EBITDA. And I'm like, how'd you come up with that number?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I have $5 million in inventory. I have this and this and this. They could be upside in inventory, upside down in debt. And that's the number they need to get out of debt. Or most likely what I hear is, oh, well, that, I need $20 million to retire on. I need $20 million to start my life all over again, you know? So their number is never based upon the value of the business. And there's a huge gap between what they feel they need and what right. the business is really worth. We try to bridge right. that gap.
Yeah, I think that's so helpful because, again, you don't know what you don't know. And that's why it's important to bring people like yourself and others into this conversation because, and I love Shark Tank. I know several, you know, I've had several people that I know that have been on Shark Tank. I've gotten to, you know, talk with and meet Mark Cuban as well. And I love what they've done as far as, you know, inspiring entrepreneurship and people to, you know, really craft their own future and different things. But I think a lot of people sit back and they watch this show and they're like, okay, cool. I have an idea. So I'm going to start an idea and then sell it for $10 million or sell it for $20 million. And they're thinking we're thinking in a silo. We're not like getting other people's perspectives to really refine that process so that we have a sellable
business.
Well, the reason
that people get locked off the Shark Tank stage is because they have unrealistic valuations. And that's the same thing that I deal with the sellers is unrealistic evaluations. Now we do help clients, business owners get ready for Shark Tank because we work with them on the numbers. We make sure they understand the numbers. We make sure they understand the valuation. Yeah. We make sure they, you know what they should take, what they shouldn't take, et cetera. We work with them so they don't look like a moron on the stage.
And it's rare, but sometimes you come in, sometimes you see people come on where they don't know what they have and it's then their way under it. And then that's where you see the sharks that do know the numbers. They know the, not they're thinking through things, how you're thinking through them. And you see, you know, they jump on that opportunity. But yeah, it's rare and it's important to know your numbers. So a little bit about my journey, Michelle, I've had my business. We have a podcasting agency for, you know, seven years. Started out as just content marketing and over time has shifted just towards podcasting and helping people launch and grow their shows. I've never really intended, I didn't start it with the intent to sell. I started my business because I really care about storytelling. I love business. I love building things. And this business would give me an opportunity to help other people build their businesses. But over the years, I've began to realize I should probably be operating my business as if I'm going to sell, whether that's my intent or not. Because if I'm using those standards, then I'm going to be building a business in a healthy way. And that's been a big mindset shift for me. But a lot of business owners I know, you know, their family businesses, they've maybe been, maybe their second generation or third generation, or, you know, they're starting something that's really close to their passion. And so they can see themselves, you know, they want to be doing this business for 10 or 20 years. They're not necessarily thinking about selling. Help our audience understand why it's healthy to make that mindset shift to be preparing your business to sell, even if you don't, you know, maybe you're not going to try and sell in the next year or in the next 5 years. Why should people still be thinking about this?
Like I said earlier, 80 to 90% of businesses on the market will never sell. There's a reason for that. The reason is business owners are not planning their exit. So I always tell my clients, you know, it's so important to plan your exit from the beginning because the generational businesses are not really continuing to be passed from generation to generation anymore. It's less than, I think, 10% now. And the reason for that is because most kids want to go out and create their own masterpiece. They want, you know, they've seen how many sacrifices we made along the way and, you know, all the arguments we've had along the way. But a lot of kids are not wanting their family business. I mean, I have so many business owner friends. They're like, gosh, I thought I was going to go this for my family, my kids, and they don't want it. So it's always important to really plan. And I call it the GPS exit model in my book, Exit Rich, but it's important to plan that from the beginning because of what you just said. If you're planning a business on the six P's, on the solid infrastructure, it's kind of like building a house. When you build a house and you hire a contractor, they, what do? They tear up the ground, they dig deep, they lay all the pipes, they put in the foundation. If they don't do all that and go really deep and put in the foundation, what happens when a strong wind comes by? Same thing with a business. So if you're planning your business to sell and you're operating all six cylinders, you got the right people in place, you got the right management team, you're working on your business, not in your business. You're in the right industry, you have a revenue stream. So if one dies, then you have other ones that you're still making profits on. If you have your processes all buttoned up, you know, if you have your proprietary, your patents, your trademarks, your contracts, your database, your celebrity endorsements, radio, digital, content, podcasts, etc., customer diversification, you're going to be extremely profitable because you're going to be working on building a sustainable business that you can then scale. So when you're ready, if you're ever ready, if you're not ready, you never want to sell, great, you have a much better business. That's your, you know, you just won the game because you have a better business. But if you say one day, which most owners will, I want to sell because my kids don't want the business. Now you actually have a sellable asset. That's where business owners get trapped because they're ready to sell, but they never created a sellable asset. And so I always say, start with the end in mind. You know, in Exit Rich, we have the GPS exit model. The problem is business owners are so busy working in their business. Business owners don't plan to fail. They fail to plan. So I always say, when you want to drive somewhere, what do, Seth? You're in Colorado. What's the first thing you pull out?
Yeah, you either get snow tires or chains or
directions.
To do what?
Directions to where you're driving.
Oh, to get directions where you're driving? Yeah, you put it in the GPS.
And what's the first thing you have to plug in that GPS?
You have to know where you're going.
What happens if you don't know where you're going?
Then you'll end up somewhere, but it's probably not where you want to go.
But you're going to end up off that financial cliff. You're going to be driving around in circles, ending up nowhere. So you have to figure out your destination as a business owner. And so I tell my clients, just pick a number. Like, well, Michelle, I'm not sure. I go, just pick a number. You can always change it. Let's say you want to sell for $20 million. Great, there's a number. Now what do you need? What's the GPS need to know now? He's to know where you're starting from. And I don't know if you know this, Seth, but 99.9% of business owners never, ever get their company evaluated until they actually think about selling. So they can be in operations for 20 years and never know what their business is worth. That's financial suicide. You should know what your business is worth every single year. You need that financial evaluation checkup. Because there are events to increase valuation, there are events to decrease valuation. This pandemic is a perfect example of that. So let's say you want to sell for 20 years, probably worth $5 million. Next thing you need to know in a GPS exit model, it's how long is it going to take you to get there? So let's say you want to get there in 5 years. Now you need to know, well, who's my buyers going to be? Those five types of buyers. And then you need to ask, well, what's their buying criteria? What are they looking for? What will make a buyer pay more money than other buyers? Because buyers pay for synergies. They pay for databases and contracts. I mean, Facebook paid $19 billion for WhatsApp, and WhatsApp was hemorrhaging money. But they had 1 billion users. Buyers are buying synergies. You never want to go to a CPA to get a business evaluation because CPAs don't know how to evaluate synergies. You want to go to an M&A expert. And then you need to know, well, what's my numbers need to be? If I want to sell for $20 million, what's my gross revenues, my COGS, my operating expense, and most importantly, what does my EBITDA need to be? You need to have an EBITDA between $4 to $5 million, depending upon your synergies, and wish yourself for $20
million. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's great. And I'd love to ask about kind of a business type that I think has become really popular over the last decade, which is usually service-based businesses that are really personality driven. They're driven around the personality of the owner. I think this has become really common with social media exploding over the last decade or 15 years or so, to where there's a lot of service-based businesses. It's in other industries, but I see mostly in service-based businesses where so much of it is built around the individual, the CEO's face, the CEO's name. You know, this, and the CEO often feels like, the founder feels like, if they step away, you know, to where people are hiring my company story on instead of hiring Seth Silver's, then it's going to be more impersonal. And, you know, so there's all these reservations from pulling away from that. But I, you know, people can't buy you. And so I think that provides some challenges. So how do you help people navigate that when maybe they want to sell, but their whole business is built around their personality?
Well, I mean, that's why I speak at a lot of events all over the country. I do a lot of podcasts because it is a huge problem. Earlier, I said you have to have people, and you have to have the right people in the right seats, and you have to ask the who question, who handles customer service, marketing, quality control, customer relations, et cetera. And it's not just a service industry, it's lots of different industries, but it's a challenge. And, you know, we have a client right now who we're selling an online education business for. All the videos, all the content. We have like four different companies, online education. They're all created around the owner. And the owner is on every single video, every single website, et cetera. And I keep telling him, look, and their name. And I keep saying, look, you got to get away from this. You got to rebrand it. You got to get the, you got to separate yourself. I always tell owners, you have to brand both. You have to brand you and you have to brand your company. Now, you don't necessarily have to brand you, but you definitely have to brand your company. If you look at a Tony Robbins, he had to do an ESOP because nobody, you just said it, nobody's going to buy you. Nobody's buying a Tony Robbins. If the company is so dependent upon you because of your roles in the company and responsibilities, but also because of the brand and the customer relationships, then you're probably not going to be able to sell 100%. You're going to have to sell 60, 70, 80%, and you're not probably going to be able to maximize value. So you really have to start separating that out to where the business is not dependent upon your brand.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good point of highlighting that you need to build the brand. You need to build the business brand. You could, if you want to, you can also build the personal brand, but you definitely have to have the
business brand. Jobs did both. Steve Jobs was great at branding himself. You always knew what he was going to wear when he went on stage with Black Hoodie. You know? But guess what? Apple logo was everywhere when he was on stage, right? So he's one of the best at branding both. T. Harv Eckert wrote The Millionaire Mindset. And T. Harv Eckert was branding everything around T. Harv Eckert until some smart advisor got a hold of him and said, wait, you're never going to be able to sell this because you are the brand. And that's when he started Peak Potentials. So I think it's important to really brand both of you. But if you only can have the time and the bandwidth to brand one, then you always brand the company first.
That's great. That's great advice. So let's talk about valuations in our last, you know, five to eight minutes of this interview. I know that's not nearly enough time to talk about all the ways to value a company, but a lot of, a lot of people don't know, they don't have any clue. And so, like you said, they just pick a number. Okay. $20 million. Mm-hmm. Can you give us kind of a quick crash course on, what you should be thinking about when, you know, having an idea of like my company might be worth this much, like what numbers are actually going to indicate how much you could sell a company worth?
Yeah. So that's where it gets really tricky. And I can give you a quick crash course and I'm always happy to come back on, but it gets very tricky because again, business owners never look at the value of their business. They look at what they need. They need to get out of debt or they need to enter the next phase of their life. So when we look at valuations, we're going to look at the financials. And many business owners' financials are a disaster because many small businesses, one, they live out of their business. They might not pay themselves a salary. They pay themselves very little salary. They live out of the business and they don't keep good records. So we recast financials and we add back all those personal expenses plus those non-recurring expenses. Non-recurring could be, hey, you know, there was a snowstorm, and you had to replace your roof, and for whatever reason, it wasn't covered by the insurance company. It cost you $30,000 on the real estate that the business operates off of. Well, that's a non-recurring because you don't replace your roof, or you hired a software developer. So it's really important to keep a spreadsheet month by month. Now, I know this is not what you're asking me for, but this is what I want everybody to start doing. Keep a spreadsheet month by month, year by year, of exactly what personal stuff you ran through the business and exactly what non-recurring, because guess what? In 2023, you're not going to remember 2022. And you're certainly not going to remember 5 years back. So just a quick crash course. Businesses other than tech, for EBITDA that's under $1 million, again, that's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, and I call it adjusted EBITDA, because we normalize those financials, anything under a million will typically trade at anywhere between 1.5 to 3, maybe 3.5 of EBITDA, depending upon the industry, depending upon the synergies. Proprietary, which is a 4P, we didn't really get into, but it is the highest driving value. It is the highest. It can take you from a 5 to a 10 to a 15. So businesses over $1 million in EBITDA typically start at 4.5, 5 and up. They don't start at 1.5. There are more buyers for businesses over $1 million in EBITDA, over 3 million, over 5 million, than there are for businesses under $1 million in EBITDA.
Interesting.
Yes, because there's private equity.
So this really puts the focus on your EBITDA, not just on your revenue. You know, if you're doing 5 million in revenue and your expenses are you're spending 4.9 million a year, then you're not going to be able to do much.
Well, that's another big, you're right. 1,000% correct. I mean, that's a huge, big misconception out there. And that's why I said, don't go to a CPA to do evaluation, because a lot of clients will come to me and say, well, my CPA told me I could get 3x revenues or 4x revenues. Well, if you're generating $10 million, but your overhead is $950, you're not going to be able to sell that business. If it's 9.5, you got $500,000, you're not going to sell. Nobody's going to pay you on revenue. The only companies that ever get a multitude, only industry that only ever gets a multitude of revenue are tech companies.
Yeah.
Every other industry is a multiple of EBITDA, of adjusted EBITDA. That's why it's so important to keep good records of what it's worth. Now, here's what drives value. I'll give you an example. I'll give you a quick story, if that's okay. Yeah. So we're selling the company at a price for $9.8 million. It was in the oil energy sector. And they had a few patents, and they had customer concentration. 65% of their concentration was with BP. We probably entertained about 500 buyers on that one business. And we had several LOIs, but they all had contingency language, earnouts, seller financing, contingent on this, clawbacks, et cetera. Because if they lost BP, they don't want to pay that big price. They want their money back, you know? And so my owners, I had two owners, they said, we're not doing that. I'm not going to take money and have to give it back, you know? And so they said, nope, we're not doing that. Find another buyer. And I'm like, okay, that's so easy. I'll go find another buyer that doesn't care about customer concentration. But we did. We found the perfect strategic that similar products and services, and then strategic have been trying to get their products into BP for decades and can never get their foot in the door. So they're not even buying EBITDA.
They're buying
BP contract. They're buying that contract because they know that one contract can catapult their business to the next level and pay back that money very quickly. So they ended up paying 165% more than the business appraised for 70% of the company. So that's what we do in evaluations. We look at 6 different methods, and the 6 P's are the biggest method that we look at because it's not always about the EBITDA. You know, Facebook wasn't buying WhatsApp's EBITDA. They were buying their billion users.
Right.
So you always got to really look at the synergies, at the contracts, at the databases. We got one client that has Oprah. They have a celebrity endorsement. They have all their products with Oprah. A strategic will pay a lot of money for them because they want to be in front of Oprah. So you really have to identify these synergies and really find the buyers that are willing to outbid all the other buyers. Because at the end of the day, value is what a buyer determines to pay for your company. Buyers determine value based on what it means to them and how it will catapult their current company to the next level.
Yeah. I love that. I love this conversation, and there's a million more questions that I could ask. So we might have to have you back on the show, but I encourage all of our listeners to go check out your books. Can you mention the different books that you've written and how they can find the books and find more information about you?
Sure. So for the sake of time, I'm just going to mention Exit Rich right now because it's the most recent book that came out, endorsed by Steve Forbes, my co-author Sharon Lecter, who wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad with Robert Kiyosaki. She's a CPA, financial literacy expert, and the advisor to many different presidents. And then Kevin Harrington, the original shark on Shark Tank, wrote the foreword. So Exit Rich, you can, if you're outside of the United States, buy it on Amazon because the shipping costs are just extraordinary if you're trying to ship from America to anywhere. If you're in the United States, it's at every Hudson bookstore and every major airport. We are also on in all the major bookstores, Books a Million, Amazon, etc. You can also go to exitrichbook.com, because if you buy from exitrichbook.com, you get more value. You get for $24.79, we'll email you the book, the digital download. We'll ship the hardcover to your doorstep. We'll give you a lifetime membership in the Exit Rich Book Club. And there we have content, and we do really deep dives in these different strategies and techniques that I've been training on for 20 years, plus documents to operate your business, example org charts, employee handbooks, policy and procedure manuals, to sell your business, sample letter of intents, purchase agreements, due diligence checklists, closing docs. They're all there for your review and download. And I can assure you, Seth, that they cost, all these documents cost me over $50,000 to create, and they're there for your review. And that's at exitrichbook.com.
Wonderful. Well, I encourage everybody, check out the link in the show notes to get that. And what is the best website for people to find out more information if they are, considering selling their business, or they want to get in touch more on the business side?
So you can go to SeilerTucker.com. That's our main website, SeilerTucker.com. You can also go to Seiler Tucker Academy and take the 6P quiz to see what your strongest P's and your weakest P's are. And I encourage everyone to listen to Exit Rich, where we talk about $1 million and $1 billion exits.
Wonderful. Well, Michelle, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us on the Small Business Storytellers. And I hope that this episode has been valuable to you, the listeners, as you go on your journey of building a business that you love, and hopefully one day selling a business for a price that you love. So, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Seth. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening to the Small Business Storytellers. If you've wanted to start a podcast and have been wondering if you can use podcasting to grow your business, but don't know where to start, I'd love to talk. Head to successwithstories.com/podcast to learn exactly how to launch, grow, and profit from a podcast for your business. Again, that is successwithstories.com/podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this episode, share it with someone you know who would also like it. If you want to be a guest on the podcast or know someone who would be a great guest on the show, let me know. Thank you, and we will see you next time on the Small Business Storytellers.